Steiner here with you this November 20th, 2022 on Liberation Station Radio Show. The site is theliberationstation.com, and we're streaming live on Facebook. Fortunately, Facebook is cooperating, and that is over at facebook.com/wearechange Tampa. And when we play the first clip, then I will copy that over to the Republic Broadcasting Facebook page. And what I did copy over to the Republic page is a just an announcement of the playback, free playback weekend for two documentary series, Propaganda Exposed, and from Ty and Charlene Bollinger, who are the creators of The Truth About Cancer, The Truth About Pet Cancer, The Truth About Cancer. I'm not sure what the subtitle is having to do with a tour through Asia, how Asia treats cancer. It's a separate set of modalities there in that documentary set. And now they have Propaganda Exposed. And the other documentary series I posted about an hour ago on Republic's Facebook page is the Endgame series, endgameseries.com. If you want to go there, if you want to go to the direct link for the replays, endgameseries.com/viewing/replay. And for Propaganda Exposed, the link to go directly to the replay page is go2.propaganda-exposed.com/docuseries/replay. Or if you just go to the Republic Facebook page, then you'll see those links on the graphic announcement, a little infographic there. And I'm paying attention to the chat room right now over at the listen/archives page. And we'll get into some a couple of long clips, or one long clip. Pardon me there. One long clip from the last edition of The High Wire, an excellent interview with Dr. Peter McCullough. First, we'll start with a very short 5-minute clip from Jeffrey Jackson's usual appearance on The High Wire with Del Bigtree, and he's just going to go over a recent study just published 9 days ago in The Lancet entitled Protection from Previous Natural Infection Compared with mRNA Vaccination Against SARS-CoV-2 Infection and Severe COVID-19 in Qatar, a retrospective cohort study. Very large study. I think it was over 770,000 subjects in the study. So he's going to go over that, and then we'll get into Dr. Peter McCullough. It's about an hour and 6 minutes long, and I really don't like taking up so much time of the show, but I can't think of anyone who does it better and really goes through a lot of information, a lot of studies. They're going to go over how they're now threatening his medical board certifications to practice medicine. And also myocarditis studies that were required to be done by the pharmaceutical companies before the FDA issued its emergency use authorization, but they were not done. And there's reportage on that. Not that we would trust either of those either of those entities, Pfizer or Moderna, but here's an article at Children's Health Defense, if we have the time to cover, from 2 days ago, November 18th, 2022, entitled Too Little, Too Late, Pfizer, Moderna to Study Long-Term Risks of Myocarditis After COVID Vaccines. Pfizer and Moderna are launching clinical trials to track long-term health issues following a diagnosis of vaccine-associated myocarditis and pericarditis in teens and young adults. But some experts said the risks are already clear. And see, take that off of the screen. If you'd like to keep track and watch the videos, see the illustrations, the studies, the graphs, the video, whatever I whenever I play a video, I'm showing it up on screen here for those on the Facebook live feed, and you can follow along because there's a lot of information that doesn't get covered. Or if you want to get these references, you can go to thehighwire.com, sign up for their email list, and I think it's about 3 or 4 or 5 days after the show that they send the list of references. And gosh, it's really astonishing all the studies that they cover that Peter McCullough has covered, that, things that I wasn't aware of. So we'll get into that. Let's see, what else will we do? I'll get into state banking. The Bank of North Dakota is the only state bank, and the advantages of that are outlined in a recent interview. I'm glad to see it's coming to attention, to public attention. This interview on Children's Health Defense Rumble channel, rumble.com, Children's Health Defense is the channel, published November 10th. Does your state need a sovereign state bank? And this interview with Catherine Austin Fitz, Polly Tommy, and Carolyn Betts on the screen here is Catherine Austin Fitz and Carolyn Betts. But Polly Tommy, you are probably already familiar with Children's Health Defense. And let's get into, first of all, before I get too far afield on all of the things that I want to cover, let's get out of the way these first two clips. And this first clip, as I mentioned, is about 5 minutes. Your calls are welcome after the clip. And then we'll get into the second clip, which is about a minute, an hour and 5 minutes. So we'll take your calls after that one is completed. This first clip with Jeffrey Jackson, let me get it all synced up and ready to go here, Sam. This is a last edition of The High Wire, November 17th. Jeffrey Jackson spending some time on natural infection, how much better it is. This recent study just continues to prove. So, Sam, when you're ready, please roll that clip.
About. And now there's more studies coming out along the same lines of the studies we continue to cover here. This is out of Qatar, and they're looking at natural immunity again. We have this natural immunity that's just this uncomfortable fact for the vaccine developers. Protection from previous natural infection compared with mRNA vaccination against SARS-CoV-2 infection and severe COVID-19 in Qatar, a retrospective cohort study. They looked at over 170,000 individuals in this study. This is what they said here. This is their findings. The overall adjusted hazard ratio for SARS-CoV-2 infection was 0.47 after previous natural infection versus BNT6, that's Pfizer's vaccination, and 0.51 after previous natural infection versus mRNA-1273 vaccination. That is Moderna. So keeping that up there, when you're looking at the hazard ratio, how to read this, 0.47, you just basically subtract that from 100, and you get 53%. So natural immunity reduced the risk of infection by 53% and then 49% compared to Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines, respectively. Now, it gets even more interesting when we get to really
so
the
natural
nuts and
infection performed 53% better than having had the vaccinations. And so
yes,
when we look at that news thing saying avoid the unvaccinated, again, here we are in the reversal of the truth. The actual truth is the safest people walk this planet. And by the way, in the endemic state that we're now in with COVID, the, you know, overwhelming odds are that you've already had it, whether you know it or not. Everyone's come in contact with it. Your body has dealt with this. So you have immunity. You are now, if you haven't been vaccinated, you're not getting that repeated over and over again illness. Like we're seeing Biden and Walensky. These people are getting sick four, five, six times because, as we said, you have this original antigenic sin problem amongst many others, maybe immune enhancement problems. We have negative efficacy. All of this from the vaccine. The one thing they're telling you is supposed to be making you healthy is actually putting you at risk. And the one group you can be safe around is the previously infected, the unvaccinated. And your news is telling you isolate those people, segregate them, treat them horribly because they're putting you at risk.
Right. And so the infection really is not the what the radical arm of the medical media, if you will, tries to defend. The hill that they try to defend is hospitalizations, intensive care, mortality, and death from COVID. That's the thing right. that they still hang their hat on. So let's see what this study has to say about that. It goes on to say this. The overall adjusted HR is a hazard ratio for severe acute care hospitalizations, critical intensive care unit hospitalizations, or fatal COVID-19 cases was 0.24. Again, that's 76%. So keep going. After previous natural infection versus BNT162B2, that's Pfizer's vaccination, and 0.24 after previous natural infection versus mRNA-1273 vaccination. So this is natural infection is reducing your chance of those things, hospitalization, intensive care units, and mortality by 76%. So you have a better chance, 76% better chance of not suffering those things or dying with natural immunity.
And this isn't a study of 300 people. It's 170,000 individuals were a part of this study, correct?
Right, right. Wow. And so the study is really interesting because it goes on even further. So those results are pretty interesting and very important. But it goes on further to say this. Vaccine protection against infection waned with time after the second dose. This is something we know from other studies as well. Whereas natural immunity showed little waning in protection for at least 8 months after the primary infection. Even during the Omicron wave, natural infection was associated with lower incidences than BNT162B2 and mRNA-1273 vaccination. And then it goes on to say this. It starts to talk about mechanisms. Vaccination induces systemic immunity that might not be retained in the upper respiratory tracts, unlike natural infection, which induces longer-term and strong mucosal immunity at the site of the virus entry and replication. So remember, Peter McCullough was, you know, just raked across the coals by the censors for saying there's an iodine solution. And if you basically gargle with that, squirt that in your nose because it's replicating in the nasal pharynx and in the throat, and then it gets into the lungs. And that's obviously where the really big problems with COVID happens, with the lungs and the oxygen saturation. So this study is really confirming those things.
Yeah, and it just shows you, too, the natural infection does give you immunity in your lungs and through the whole system injecting this thing. It's not creating this, you know, antibody production and memory inside the lungs, which is problematic, and is why we're probably seeing multiple infections amongst the vaccinated versus those that had a natural infection. You know, across the board, what we are showing on the high wire is the science-based evidence. We're backing in evidence, and I want to just tell everyone out there, there's no show like this. We are completely transparent. We're not asking you to take Jeffrey Jackson's word for it or my word for it. All you have to be is a member on our newsletter, which simply means you're going to take the next 5 seconds of your busy life, scroll down the page at the high wire.
Okay, we'll just cut it right there, and next, as I announced earlier, this next clip is an interview with Dr. Peter McCullough, and he's going to go over how his board certifications to practice medicine are being threatened, what he's doing about it, what he's done about it. He's gotten a new gig with like-minded doctors, medical professionals, and then the myocarditis studies that the FDA called for because they knew the risks of the spike proteins. Well, long ago, back in the early 2000s, late 1998, I think, after Ralph Baric came out with a novel coronavirus, apparently. It was known that the FDA required, before the emergency use authorizations were issued, that Pfizer and Moderna conduct these studies on their mRNA shots, and they did not do so. So now they are. I don't think those anti-vaxxers ever had anything to do with that, do you think? You know, I don't think they ever had anything to do with, say, taking mercury out of the vaccines, except, of course, for the residual mercury and the multi-dose vials of the influenza shot vaccines, meaning that you're more likely to get a higher mercury dose in later doses due to it being concentrated at the bottom of the vial. So, these anti-vaxxers seem to be causing a lot of stir with those multinational corporations and getting things done a little bit, but nobody seems to give them credit. But, I think that really the so-called anti-vaxxers are really exposing how dangerous and deadly the vaccines are, forced the mandatory vax agenda to be rushed, so they are making a lot of mistakes that have now won over a lot of folks, including credentialed and degreed authorities who never would have questioned vaccines otherwise. I'm talking about true vaccines, not these COVID shots, but now that they start with the COVID shots, and that opens up their curiosity, like cardiologist and advisor to the UK's National Health Service, Dr. Asim Malhotra. You may have heard of about a month ago, he interviewed on the High Wire. And after his father died of a heart attack, right after his COVID shot, he became curious. He admits, he confesses that he never thought that vaccines could have caused anything. As they say, ABV, it was caused by ABV, anything but vaccines. But now he has changed his tune. And many others, including Dr. McCullough, who now will no longer administer or recommend any vaccine. So that's very inspiring. So glad that we're making new allies. And, even many people who are still pro-vaccine, signatories to the Great Barrington Declaration that called for focused protection rather than locking down society. Certain dangers. Yeah, always, a lot of people will say, rationalize the lockdowns as they did it for our safety. No, they didn't do. You have to start out your questioning with, well, no, they didn't do this for our safety. There's certain dangers like suicides as a result of unemployment, lower standards of living, drug, spousal abuse, self-abuse of all kinds, lower work ethic. All those multinational corporations and the big box stores allowed to stay open selling slave wage goods, dangerous and deadly products, while the homegrown, hometown Main Street businesses were required to stay shut. Liquor stores and strip clubs also allowed to stay open. It wasn't for our health. So it's all about fighting the multinational corporations. A lot of progressives need to be reminded of that objective, now that they're eating our lunch. And so we have at the Great Barrington Declaration, these scientists, gbdeclaration.org. Let me pull that up, I think, here real quick, and show you how many scientists and doctors are signatories, many of whom are pro-vaccine, but they're just anti-lockdown. So when people say Governor DeSantis wasn't paying attention to scientists, of course he was. He was citing the Great Barrington Declaration and holding conferences with doctors. The signatories, 934,000 signatories, of those, medical and public health scientists comprise 15,989, just 11 short of 16,000. And medical practitioners, 47,278. So I want to make that point. And this great clip from the last edition of High Wire, I hope will help be very persuasive to many more. So I hope you take some of this information and call in to talk shows. And if they cut you off, just keep calling back, because there's one thing you need to have. Quality to be admired, even by your adversaries, is persistence. So if you're just getting cut off, think of it as a game of, I'm getting my 15 minutes of fame. a few seconds at a time, and then move on to the next call, call in the next talk show. We'll be right back during Liberation Station Radio Show and start rolling this clip from the last edition of The High Wire with Dr. Peter McCullough. Stay tuned. Because there's nowhere you can run and still feel safe.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off the state-classified agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Start out this clip and clip number two, Sam, in just a second, and let folks know that after this long clip that's going to take up a good part of the show, it's an hour and 5 minutes, You can call us at 512-240-8252. That's 512-240-8252. And if you'd like to, and toll free 800-313-9443. Oh, pardon me, folks. I dropped the mic again. Pardon me, folks. We're going to get into this clip, and your calls are welcome after this long clip of an hour and 5 minutes. Call-in numbers are 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. And toll-free, 800-313-9443. But please call the toll number if you can. And if your calling plan doesn't allow that, I can actually conference you in on Skype. So if you want to go in the chat room and give me your Skype address, I'll conference you in. If you have Skype, and the chat room is over at the listen/archives page at theliberationstation.com. That's listen/archives page at theliberationstation.com. And we only have about 5 minutes, but let's get started as soon as we can, get this long clip over with, and put this up on the screen now, Sam. So when you're ready, please roll that clip.
There are so many doctors that rose up. In fact, I remember at one of the rallies in Washington, D.C., Dr. Orso said, we are 17,000 doctors standing up for medical freedom, medical truth. Well, what happens if you start taking the license of those doctors away? They can't say that they're 17,000 doctors anymore. Now they're just regular people stripped of their credentials for doing what? Telling the truth. That's what laws are being passed in California and around this country. It's all part of what needs to stop. And there's a lot of doctors that are talking about how dangerous this is, not only for them, but for you.
The government has gotten things wrong repeatedly during the pandemic. And it's only because doctors and others who have called this out and said, look, the evidence doesn't say this, that they've changed their course.
If you practice in any way or speak in any way, it's contrary to this on a public venue, on social media, with your patients, in private, you are at risk of losing your license.
We can go back to many issues, 1% mortality, closing schools is healthy for our children. Wearing masks helps prevent the dissemination.
Originally, when the vaccine was first introduced, Anthony Fauci and even President Biden told us that it would prevent the infection of COVID-19. We now have learned that it doesn't prevent infection or transmission.
A physician with a gag order is not a physician you can trust. Patients want to know that if they ask their doctor a question, including a question about COVID, they'll get an honest opinion from the physician.
It will be absolutely chilling on the practice of medicine. It'll become almost impossible to practice medicine the way we are trained to, which is to use our objective reasoning to share our ideas with our patients, and to come up with the best possible recommendation for that particular patient for that particular circumstance.
The truth comes from people honestly engaging with the data. Censorship kills that. Censorship kills science. I think censorship actually killed people during this pandemic.
It's arguably one of the most dangerous times to be a good doctor, meaning a doctor that does their own investigation and shares with their patients what they're finding in their own research. Exactly what we expect from our doctors. Now they are being silenced and censored and coming under threat. Well, amongst those doctors that have appeared on the high wire and expressed, you know, their concerns with the vaccine, their discussions on COVID, the best and the brightest have been here. But among them, and at the perhaps the top of this sphere, is Dr. Peter McCullough, one of the most published doctors and scientists in the world. I am so honored to be joined by him right now, Dr. McCullough.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming here. This climate now, under the circumstances that are just being discussed by all of these great doctors here in America, where we have free speech, we may be on alternate media trying to say, hey, folks, we have a problem here. You're about to lose the doctor-patient relationship. You're about to lose any focus from your doctor discussing issues with you and their own personal take on things. You know, am I overstating it that this may be one of the most dangerous times to be a doctor?
I think we're at a dramatic inflection point in America. That montage was incredible.
Yeah.
From practicing doctors like Dr. Barkey, a family physician, to Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, professor of medicine at Stanford,
all
telling America that we've had a deep, pervasive change in the tenor of medical discourse, scientific discourse. America knows me. I testified in front of the Congressional Oversight Panel in 2007. I was on C-SPAN for hours. I've been a president of a major medical society, 650 peer-reviewed publications in the site of the National Library of Medicine. I have 60 on COVID-19. And from the very beginning, before the vaccines, I felt a sense of strain. I felt a sense of discomfort. And then, frankly, it evolved into gag orders, threats, loss of employment, lawsuits. That's kind of before the vaccines. Now the vaccines come in. People want to know, what in the world is going on? What's changed? And this is worldwide.
Yeah.
It's worldwide. What's changed in the world all at the same time, all working to suppress the free interchange of information around SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, and the vaccines?
What is so shocking about this moment is we are now, you know, we are not blind any longer. The argument can't be with the CDC, the NIH, and Health and Human Services that we just didn't know better. And I saw a meme that says, boy, we went from trust the science to we didn't know what we were talking about really quickly. But in this moment right now, doctors are under threat. In California, law just passed. If you were a doctor that spoke out against COVID, your license is going to be under review. At the same moment, Tony Fauci is out saying, yeah, you know, the science changed on us. The vaccine didn't end up stopping transmission the way we had hoped. Walensky saying the same thing. You got Deborah Birx admitting, I always knew that it wasn't going to stop transmission. Perhaps we overplayed our hand. We are getting these concessions from the CDC and Health and Human Services saying, yeah, we might have overstated it. And yet doctors like yourself that didn't overstate it, actually, I think we're spot on. And every day, more and more of what you said is proven to be true. Yet they are not relaxing on this idea that CDC, good, yes, any doctor challenging them wrong, even though we know they're the ones that are wrong.
It's so true. Now, California AB 20998 doesn't go into law until January 1st. Dr. Barkey and Dr. Mark McDonald have launched a lawsuit to stop that. You saw the vignette from Aaron Cariotti, former professor of medicine and ethics psychiatry at UC Davis, saying, listen, patients go to doctors for a medical opinion. Sometimes they go to other doctors for second opinions, but they never go to doctors under gag orders to get a government narrative. The California Medical Board says that the statements need to be consensus-driven. Patients don't go to doctors for consensus-driven statements. And I can just tell you, on COVID-19, it's so complex. This illness, of which I've dedicated the last 3 years of my life to, I've essentially done a fellowship in COVID-19. It's so complex. The virus has mutated to such a great degree. We've had the introduction of all different types of biotechnologies, other, you know, old medicines, new medicines, that for each patient, I completely agree with Dr. Cariotti, each patient is unique based on their background conditions. Their diagnosis, their prognosis, and their management needs to be stylized, cannot be dictated in a government narrative.
And here's what's amazing about it. They speak about misinformation as though there's one piece of information that is totally made up in a figment of somebody's imagination, and then there's the science. When what you have brought to this conversation is that we have to at least admit that there are two arguing schools of science right now. There is not a religious belief in science. There is the science coming from the CDC that is, you know, apparently funded in many ways, and we're going to get into what's really going on with the pharmaceutical industry. But there are universities. There are science studies being done on myocarditis, heart issues, blood clotting, thrombocytopenia, cancer. I mean, the list is incredible of, and then we can go into the masking and the lockdowns. I mean, study after study showing that there is real proof the masks don't do anything, lockdowns didn't do anything, the vaccines are dangerous in many different ways, definitely specific populations. We could argue how many people will be injured, but you cannot say that there's no science on the other side. And that would be the only way you could even maybe get away with saying you're going to censor this conversation, because there's a bunch of crazy people that have no evidence, and then there's us. It's just not the case.
Well, let me tell you, I'm in my fourth decade of medical practice now. I'm the most published person in my field in the world in history prior to COVID, studying heart and kidney disease. The word misinformation has never appeared in any paper that I have written. It's never appeared in any textbook I have studied. It's never come up on a board question. And let me tell you what, I researched this. Misinformation appeared in the English literature around 1500. It was extensively used during Nazi Germany and other propaganda campaigns. And in 2018, Washington Post said misinformation was word of the year because it was used in partisan politics. Now enter COVID-19, and misinformation now is the tool that government authorities, medical boards, other entities that really have a stakeholder position in the vaccine agenda, they're using the word misinformation as a propaganda tool, meaning if they hold information, everybody else holds misinformation.
Right.
And you're right, in the world of science and medical care, clinical care, there are only scientific data and observations which change over time, and there's always two or more interpretive points of view.
Right.
Doctors spend endless hours and weekends going to meetings. Why? To discuss data. We review data together, and we always have an interpretive point of view, but it's exchanging those viewpoints that allows the science to progress. And what you saw in that vignette is very esteemed doctors saying, listen, we're afraid the field is actually not advancing because there is now a complete inhibition of scientific discourse.
Absolutely. Let's get into some of that discourse. And I want to really get into your area of expertise. We've talked a lot about this on the high wire, and we keep seeing more and more studies, but no one has looked closer at the heart issues, the myocarditis. To me, in many ways, there are so many people, and we get distracted by all the different things that people are writing about this vaccine. You know, what's in it, and you know, what's it being used for, but you don't have to go any further than heart issues to me. To me, if this causes myocarditis in children, and we have talked about the CDC studies going back out of Israel, incredible rises in myocarditis in small test groups that the CDC knew about, you know, and so where is the science at now? You've been watching this. Is there anything you want to correct as we get more and more understanding of this, because you've been really strong, you've been, right, you know, reading us everything, where are we at?
I want to fill in on this, because this is actually quite a story in medical history. If we go back to 1992,
okay,
Ralph Barrick at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and his team, arguably he's the most knowledgeable person in his team on coronaviruses, was studying beta coronaviruses in rabbits. And he could find certain strains of coronavirus in rabbits and later on in monkeys where the virus itself clearly could damage the heart.
Okay.
Now, I have to give the animals a lot of it. It's not the same as a human getting a coronavirus cold. But the point is, they were cardiotropic and cardiotoxic. 1992.
Okay.
Okay. Then COVID-19 hits, and there is a narrative that COVID respiratory illness could cause myocarditis. And it's interesting how this messaged out. It messaged out to such a degree that in the NCAA, the Big Ten League, that would be University of Michigan and others, I'm a Michigan graduate in graduate school, they hold a COVID-19 respiratory illness myocarditis screening program. So they have 9,600 athletes in that year, and they had 30% of them get COVID. They offered screening. 1,500 went forward for screening. They were able to find probably about half a dozen cases where there was an elevation in troponin, but it wasn't concordant with cardiac MRI findings. They found about three dozen cardiac MRI findings, none of which were clear-cut myocarditis. They ultimately settled on an idea that it's half a dozen to a dozen possible myocarditis or subclinical myocarditis, but no hospitalizations or deaths.
And out of how many again?
9,600 total in the league, 1,500 screened, and the paper appeared by Daniels and colleagues in JAMA. So because of that, the league says, well, listen, it's just not a big risk here. We did our due diligence. They dropped the program.
Okay, so they stopped checking
troponin
levels. And
right.
And
now, another paper appears by Joy and colleagues in Journal of American College of Cardiology, a very good journal, where they prospectively take community patients with COVID, and they do every cardiac scan possible. They measure cardiac troponin. I should set this for the group. Cardiac troponin is a blood test.
Okay.
That the troponin is the most abundant protein in the heart. The troponin is the little ball that sits between actin and myosin, and it actually allows the ratchet function to come up and the machinery of the heart to contract and relax. That's troponin.
Okay.
So troponin is like a ball. During the setting of ischemia or injury, it flies off, it goes into the cytosol, and rapidly goes into the serum and blood, and that's actually measurable. We've relied on
so it sort of gets cast off.
Right.
Somehow,
so, but it is
event in the heart.
It is the basis of the definition of myocardial infarction. We've relied on it now for two decades. And when there's a characteristic rise and fall in cardiac troponin and another consistent feature like chest pain, EKG changes, or imaging changes, this is before COVID, we would diagnose a heart attack, a myocardial infarction. Now, myocarditis is not a traditional myocardial infarction because the blood vessels to the heart are open, but the heart's being directly damaged. So troponin has been used with supportive information like EKG or imaging to diagnose myocarditis.
Yeah.
And so Barrick knew this back with coronaviruses in 1992.
This is the big
going
baddie, and what's interesting, too, because we bring up these names, Ralph Barrick. This is the gain-of-function researcher, or at least that we think is in the middle of this, being funded by NIH. But part of it, he's got a thing for coronaviruses. It's his specialty. He's the one saying, you know, this could be a bioweapon somewhere in the future. But in this investigation of his, he's saying some of these coronaviruses have heart issues in the animals I'm studying.
And he proved it.
He proved it.
So, but there was enough of a hint that there could be a cardiac problem with COVID
on the Big Ten.
Yeah, the athletes are doing it, and they weren't the only ones. There were other U.S. military had a screening program. So many, because of COVID, it could cause myocarditis. They don't see much there. Military drops their program. The Big Ten drops their program. And this paper by Joy and colleagues, prospective, they measure troponin at baseline. They measure it afterwards. They do every test at all. And community COVID, not military, not athletes, people like you and me, they don't find any.
Okay.
They don't find any.
So then we can sort of get from that this form of coronavirus and the amount we are inhaling in an infection does not seem to be causing the heart issue that Barrick saw in his animal.
Right. And one more piece of data, to Valley and colleagues from Israel studies hundreds of thousands of Israelis before the vaccines with COVID-19 and has a survival curve where they follow people over time. The rate of myocarditis in those getting COVID is no different than the background rate of people who didn't get COVID, because you can get it from a parvovirus, an adenovirus. It can be idiopathic. So the point is, conclusion, before the vaccines, COVID-19 respiratory illness for humans is a negligible risk for myocarditis. So we're there. Now the vaccines start.
Yep.
So the vaccines are administered, and our inference is that the human body gets a far deeper and more systemic exposure to the spike protein. These are the spines on the ball of the virus.
Yep.
They cause myocarditis. There was a paper by Avolio and colleagues from Italy showing for sure the spike protein damages the heart. Then it advanced. Bollmeier and colleagues did biopsies of young people presenting myocarditis, finds the spike protein in the heart muscle. So, I mean, it's there.
Right there.
The conclusion. And
we have the delivery mechanism. If we're seeing an issue, we can see how it would be delivered.
It's right there. It's right there in the heart, causing damage. The FDA weighs in June of 2021 and says, yeah, it looks like the vaccines cause myocarditis. They reviewed what they had in the CDC had and said, okay, yeah, it causes myocarditis. Then the whole thing starts to explode. So what we see over the next year is Choi, I believe, Verma was the first. Washington University in St. Louis, they report a fatal case. Someone gets myocarditis and they die. Then Choi in Korea, young man, fatal case. Gil, this was the most dramatic.
And these were all after vaccination.
These are after vaccination.
After vaccination. Okay.
COVID not implicated in these.
Okay.
Then Gil reports, this is tragic, 16 and 17-year-old boys found dead at home by their parents on days 3 and 4 after the second shot of Pfizer. And the parents, you know, do the right thing. They get an autopsy. The coroner looks at this. He calls in pathologists from Michigan and from University of Minnesota. They look at all the data. They agree the Pfizer vaccine is the proximate cause of death in these boys. But important, because there was no premonitory symptoms, no chance for CPR. The boys didn't alert their parents that anything was wrong. So the Gill paper is important. Then we have a paper that comes in from Patone and colleagues, UK, where now they have 100 fatal cases, 100.
Wow.
Not autopsy proven, but the number one thing they put on the death certificate there was vaccine-induced myocarditis, 100 cases in circulation, our best cardiology journal.
Wow.
Half of the cases are with Pfizer and Moderna, but half are with AstraZeneca, which they use. So it can happen with adenoviral. The spike protein mechanism.
So for people that may be watching for the first time, mRNA technology in the Pfizer and Moderna, adenoviral vaccine vector in AstraZeneca, meaning they're using a monkey virus that's not supposed to affect human beings, sort of as a delivery system
right.
for a DNA code that goes to the cell.
Right, and then finally, this just popped. Kim and colleagues from Korea. Koreans are doing a great job, by the way, on this topic. The first Novavax-induced myocarditis. Novavax, recall, is no genetics here. That's just 5 micrograms of the purified Wuhan wild-type spike protein. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a young person gets myocarditis. Another teaching point in these cases for the doctors and nurses listening, the treatment here is corticosteroids, actually giving steroids, giving colchicine. The myocarditis is almost always the outer part of the heart muscle and involving the lining around the heart, the pericardium. So the term myopericarditis is probably a better
okay.
term to use.
Seen that term?
A better
yeah.
term to use. And so it resolves, in that case, with corticosteroids and the use of colchicine anti-inflammatory, which is our standard for pericarditis. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like naproxen or ibuprofen for pain control. If they develop signs and symptoms of heart failure, which some do, we actually have to use drugs called renin angiotensin system inhibitors and beta blockers. There was a vignette that Joe Rogan reviewed with me when I went on his show of a young college student at Northwestern University. Her first name was Simone, where she gets Moderna. A few months later, myocarditis, and she goes all the way to heart transplant at Northwestern. She dies afterwards of a complication. That was a clear-cut case. And all that is in the backdrop. And so when the Pfizer and Moderna go for full FDA approval, they get from the FDA a biological licensing agreement letter, a BLA letter, which is not a full approval. It says you could be approved if you commit to doing these things. And in both letters, it says you must study myocarditis with your vaccines,
okay.
and you must do what's called prospective cohort studies, which is measure everything at baseline, then give the vaccine, and then measure everything afterwards. Don't wait for it to develop and then try to figure right. it out later on. Do it, prospective cohort study, and nothing happens. So the companies don't do anything.
Meaning they didn't do the studies?
They didn't do the
studies. Nothing happened.
Well, they didn't do the studies.
They didn't do the
studies. There was no announcement that they were commissioning. Typically, this would go to Duke or the Brigham or Mayo Clinic, and they would just do a really high-quality prospective cohort study, right? Because everyone's taking yeah. the vaccines. All the young people are encouraged to take the vaccines. So what happens? So Mansoogian and colleagues from Thailand do the first prospective cohort study, and Mansoogian has a total of 301 children aged 13 to 18,
yeah.
and they get all the baseline troponin, EKG, and echo at baseline. This is ultrasound of the heart.
Yep.
Then they get the second dose of Pfizer. Then they get everything repeated. And here's the bombshell.
They look at them.
Do it all again. They come up with a rate of myocarditis of 2.3%. Previous, the FDA had estimated 60 new cases per million. There were data from Tracy Hogue, UC Davis, said 250 per million. And then Kaiser Permanente had an estimate of 537 per million. This blows that out of the water. This is 23,500 cases per million,
right.
according to Mansoogian. And of those, 7 kids had myocarditis that was serious, 2 kids hospitalized. They confirmed it by MRI. They used the latest troponin assay, highest quality EKG and MRI tech. That was a wonderful paper. And that's followed on the last few weeks by a study done from a very renowned cardiologist, Christian Mueller, in Basel, Switzerland. I personally know him. He's a friend of mine. He studies 777 healthcare workers, gets troponin before and after the third shot. And now doesn't get EKGs and echoes and all the MRI, but what does he find? He finds the rate of a characteristic rise of troponin, which is a rise and then a fall over 4 days. That's characteristic for cardiac injury. In 2.8% of individuals, 2.8.
Wow.
So Mansoogian, 2.3. Mueller, 2.8. It's presented at the European Society of Cardiology, which is the biggest cardiology meeting in the world. And now, days later, Pfizer and Moderna announced they're going to start their cardiac studies for myocarditis.
Unbelievable. And that is so egregious when you're now telling me they were told they were supposed to be doing that very early on, that they wouldn't get approval if they didn't do it, they didn't do it. And I fault the FDA before I even fault Moderna or Pfizer. That was the regulatory agency. This is your job. Your job is to enforce and make sure the proper studies are being done. And I always wonder as I sit here, Peter, whether 2.3% sounds like enough to people. So here's what I would say to somebody. Here's what it is. You're at a school function for your child. There's 100 kids in the class, and they have 100 cupcakes out. 2.5 of these are going to lead to a heart condition. You know, do you just say, hey, go ahead, we'll take that risk with our kid, eat any cupcake you want? Because that's what we're talking about. We're not talking a risk out of 1 million anymore, or 100,000, which is what we're told. What I find fascinating, and we've covered a little bit of this trial, is it's only 301 kids. If injury, we are always told vaccine injury, we've been told this for a century now, but certainly decades, it's a 1 in 1 million. It's a 1 in 1 million. If it's 1 in 1 million, 300 should not be enough to even see your problem. I mean, that study, you would get lucky if you saw one case, and instead you're saying they have 7 cases out of 300. That is so horrifying. In the face of what we've been told about the safety record of vaccines, you would think this program would be stopped in its tracks.
Well, it should have been stopped. I've testified in the U.S. Senate, twice now, multiple state Senate. I said a single case of fatal vaccine-induced myocarditis should have shut the program down. For sure should have changed the consent form. I've recently checked the consent form, which nowadays the consent just refers people to an FAQ. I read the FAQ. Nowhere on it does it say fatal vaccine-induced myocarditis.
Right.
It's complete.
Is it now a known?
It's an absolutely known and recognized. Now think about this. Coronaviruses, since the 1990s themselves, it was known they could cause cardiac injury. It was enough to stimulate the military and college football to screen for COVID. Then right. The vaccines come, and the vaccine manufacturers do not measure troponin during the registrational trials when they knew this rich history that this was going to cause heart damage. In fact, they knew it so much that COVID-19 could cause heart damage. Why wouldn't the vaccines with the spike protein cause heart damage? And they are willfully blind to any cardiac toxicity of the vaccines. And we are deep in trouble now because there is a clear recognition that this myocarditis in some people can lead to a scar. The scar is a small area of like a scar you see on your skin. But the electricity goes down. And when it goes through the scar, it depolarizes slowly. Then it loops up. And it forms reentry. And when reentry occurs during a normal cardiac depolarization, that's the nidus for ventricular tachycardia, or VT, and that isn't a heart rhythm. In me or you, that can be well over 200 beats a minute. It starts to make us dizzy, and if we don't do something, it degenerates to ventricular fibrillation, and then we're gone. We're on the floor, and CPR is started. And if you've seen any of these montages of these athletes, when this happens, they go down like a rock. They can't even hold out their hands to protect themselves. We're just absolutely slamming to the floor. We have seen montage after montage of people having sudden cardiac death. It's called sudden adult death syndrome.
Yeah, crazy.
And, you know, myself and Asim Malhotra, a prominent cardiologist in the UK, have come up with the same conclusion, that when we see a young person now who's previously healthy, no antecedent illness, and they suddenly die, and the two patterns are dying in sleep, typically from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., yep. or dying during sports. By the way, both of those time periods, there's a rise in norepinephrine, epinephrine, which is probably a internal trigger for this. And there's no suicide, there's no drug overdose, there's no motor vehicle accident. It is the COVID-19 vaccine and subclinical myocarditis, like in the Gill paper, until the parents come out or the family comes out and they tell us otherwise. And the family can clear this up, Del. If they come out and say, listen, they didn't take the vaccine, okay, We'll lay down our concern, but let's be conservative and assume right now that these are fatal vaccine-induced myocarditis cases.
Here's what I've spoken about for years, all through COVID we discussed, but you know how you just keep saying things enough times, but something occurs to you that's so simple and so horrifying, and this is it when I look at these trials. You have design trials. You have tested products. You know what this is all about. I feel like every time we're seeing something now in population, a population issue pops up, a myocarditis, we go back, well, what did they see in the trials? And you find out that they literally built a wall to make sure that they didn't allow anyone to investigate that particular issue. Almost like they expected they would have that issue if they looked for it and didn't want to reveal it. And I want to say this, I want to really put this through to people because it's sinister. I'm not going to go as far as why they're doing it, but what has happened here, we have President Biden telling, well, first Donald Trump saying, I'm going to sink more money into the warp speed of this vaccine than any vaccine or technology in the history of medicine. More money. We are opening the floodgates to Moderna and Pfizer and anyone that wants to be a part of this competition. You now have money coming out every, you know, doorway and entryway there is. We are being told we will spend, and that's just America. There's France and Germany. And everyone's pouring money into these few companies. They do trials of tens of thousands of people. And one of the issues we know from the beginning, from animal trials with Barrick, even into the first, very first, you know, approaches of this vaccine, myocarditis is popping up. We see it with AstraZeneca. We got some sort of blood clotting issue. Heart, I mean, all of this is known, as you're saying. And here's what's so shocking to me, and I said this on the show, it hit me the other day. We are living in a country throughout this locking us down, destroying our jobs. My friends, I come from Hollywood, they can't get onto a film set without being PCR tested every single day. Every single day, they have to take a test. There are elementary schools in this country that were testing some of them every day, but at least once a week on Monday, you're getting the swab rammed up your nose. You can't get into your preschool without getting tested. Then we go and look at these trials where we are testing a brand new mRNA technology, never been injected into a human being before, could alter DNA, RNA. We don't know. We don't know how this is going to work. And the one thing a vaccine is supposed to do is get us out of this pandemic, which means it's going to stop transmission. The only way to figure out if it stops transmission, we're being told the biggest carrier, the biggest issue is an asymptomatic carrier, meaning someone that has it but doesn't know they have it, and they're spreading it. That's why we're all locked down and masked up, and then why we're PCR testing every day. And it occurs to me, the only place in this country where you were safe from daily or weekly PCR testing, everyone in a job, in a school, they're being subjected to it. But the only place you can be sure you don't have to worry about a PCR test is in the freaking trials of the vaccine itself. The one place we need to know can it stop transmission is the only place they're walking in and out. They're doing whatever they want. They're hugging each other. We don't care. We're not testing you. And we're not testing for myocarditis. We're not testing troponin levels. We know we have potential heart issues. Why are we sticking these people in a room? Why are they in the clinical trial? 45,000 of them for the one and 30,000 the other. The billions of dollars, isn't that what a trial's supposed to be doing? I mean, it just defies reason to the point of it being purposefully criminal.
Well, you know, it's an interesting observation. I've never heard someone put it together that way, but you make perfect sense that the clinical trial is not only for efficacy, but it's for safety and, very importantly, risk mitigation. No new product is ever going to be free of problems, and it's never going to be applied to everybody. So we always have to figure out who is it going to cause problems for.
Yeah.
What I'm making a case for, there was 20 years of data about coronaviruses, spike protein, myocarditis. There was enough to have everybody get worried with COVID. For sure, they should have measured troponin with the before and after each injection. Should have been cardiac safety built in. For sure, we should have done things. You know, transmission actually would have been tested with what's called challenge studies. And there was a discussion, Oxford discussed this originally, that is taking somebody who's vaccinated and just put them face to face with someone with COVID. Now, that would have been a challenge study. No one had the guts to do this. But everything we've learned about the vaccine,
at least PCR test once a week.
Right. Well, listen to this. We should have known what we call pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics. So we learn this after the vaccines are released, and everything we've learned gives everybody a sense of nausea. And let me fill you in with some of these citations. Fertig and colleagues figures out how to measure the messenger's RNA. It goes up in the bloodstream and stays up for 2 weeks.
We'll pause it right there, be right back. This November 20th, 2022, Liberation Station radio show. I'm Chris Steiner, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.